Martin Scorsese was nominated this week for an Academy Award as Best Director for the fifth time. Considering his body of work, Mean Streets, Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, Goodfellas, Gangs of New York, it's a wonder he's never won in more than three decades of making films. In The Aviator, he's made another epic about the maniacal businessman and filmmaker Howard Hughes.
This is what the people want. Silent pictures are yesterday's news, so I figure we gotta reshoot Hell's Angels for sound.
How much of it?
All of it. Before you even ask, I'll tell you, an additional $1.7 million. We got that much?
No.
Well, we'll make it.
Scorsese's film explores Howard Hughes's ambitions and his eccentricities, and how both fueled an obsession to make a movie beyond anything ever seen in Hollywood, a film about fighter planes. Scorsese stopped by our studios recently and told us about recreating the creation of Hell's Angels.
I think what we tried to do, and this is utilizing many different techniques, including green screen, actual shooting of DiCaprio in literally in a model plane, and some computer-generated images, what we tried to do is get the exhilaration and the extraordinary will that this man had to place himself in the middle of 40 planes in the air, directing different cameramen from different planes. It's almost like a beehive of planes buzzing in and out, the danger of that. And the piece that's used is Toccata and Fugue in G minor, I think, Bach, but it's Eugene Ormandy's orchestration of it. If you could imagine yourself in a two-seater World War I plane and other planes buzzing around you and people shooting with cameras and cameras breaking and planes taking nosedives and other planes with cameras on them following the plane down, it's just an extraordinary thing.
Howard Hughes was a man who wasn't just trying to make movies. He was trying to make movies better. And in some ways, that sort of mirrors your career also. And I'd like to take the chance to talk to you about the evolution of cameras and editing technology. And in The Aviator, I'm wondering if you were able to do things in making this film that would have been impossible or at best very, very difficult in the past.
Well, there's no doubt. And I think I didn't approach it differently. I didn't approach the design of the scenes differently. I just do it the way I normally do it, which is to sort of lock myself away with the script and have the appropriate music available to me and just quiet, some quiet. In the case of these action sequences, these flying sequences, I designed according to what John Logan had written on the page, my first impressions of the kinds of shots I wanted and the editing sequence of the scenes, very important for me. And then that fed into a situation with Rob Legato, who did the visual effects. I would take those notes and those little drawings to him, and they were transferred to little black and white faxes of photographs that we were able to do with a very, very tiny camera and some model planes. And then he transferred those to a visual storyboard, a pre-visualization, it's called, on a computer. And I found that I began to learn how to utilize that technique and say, I think I want to go more lower angle, spin it around over to the right. I found that through my own ignorance of how it works, I was able to ask the impossible. And very often they come back and they do it. So I just kept asking.
So does this expand your horizon in terms of being a filmmaker? Are you interested in new kinds of films and telling stories in different ways now that you have all these bells and whistles at your disposal?
Not necessarily, no. It depends on the story. It depends on the story. When I read the original script, they didn't tell me what it was. I'm not very fond of flying, so they took the title page off The Aviator. I didn't see that, so I just started reading, and I suddenly got caught up in this character, and I realized it was Howard Hughes. This is fascinating. There's a young man full of vibrant energy and a visionary. I immediately said, yes, I could do this. And then ultimately, as I began to work on the pre-production of the picture, I realized it's a big movie. I guess they call it the director's disease. It should think, oh, sure, I can shoot this and, you know, we'll get these scenes done real fast and that won't be a problem. I'll just design them and that'll be it. And before you know it, you're into a massive movie with many movable parts, you know, and new technology.
It seems that mobility of the camera is very important to you in your film, the way the camera moves and swoops and pans about. Mm-hmm. How do you use that in film, and why is that so important in terms of editing and putting a story together?
Well, I think it's what you want the audience to see. If a man is sitting in a chair and gets up and goes out of the room, opens the door and closes it, how do you want to show that? Where should the camera be? In front of him as he gets up, and you see his back walk towards the door and open the door and then close the door? and just hold on the door? Or should you track around as he gets up and pat him out the door? That sort of thing. It goes on. It depends on the emotional impact you want of the shot. I'm a person who makes movies that deal with narrative, even though I don't necessarily deal that much with plots. They are usually character-driven narrative stories. And so I want it to usually reflect the character's internal struggle and conflict. And what Aviator afforded me was to do this on a grand scale, but on a small scale, too. And that is, the film is, yes, it's about making the biggest plane. It has a spectacle side of the story in that way. But it's also a film about a doorknob and why he can't touch a doorknob. Now, the real filmmaking challenge is in how to shoot the doorknob. Because it's from his point of view. Why does he see the doorknob that way? Should there be a light on the doorknob and make it, you know, vibrate? We tried that. That was pretty awful. It was too literal. Why are the towels shot from that point of view when the man with the crutches says, "Can you please hand me some towels?" And you see Howard Hughes look over to his right, and then you see his point of view of a stack of ordinary-looking towels. But something about that stack of towels is telling him, do not touch me. Do not give me to that man with those crutches. And then you cut back to his reaction, and it's from the point of view of the towels, looking down. So the camera moves sort of reflect the inner conflicts or the emotions of the characters, I think, and ultimately give you a kind of operatic feeling that I seem to always want to, express. That's the way I see certain scenes.
I know we've got to let you go, but I have one last quick question. For someone who doesn't like to fly, how do you make a film like The Aviator?
Well, because I'm fascinated by it. I think it's, in the film, the sexuality is in the airplanes. And, you know, when they work, they're really great. You know, I was always more of a sheltered kid because of the business I had with this asthma. And that doesn't mean you can't dream of flying, you know, soaring. I was born in 42, so that, those beautiful old planes looked really exciting to me. I was just never one for amusement park rides. You know, I wasn't so good on those roller coasters, so I don't really enjoy that very much. But there's something special about the planes. The more I'm unnerved by it, the more I want to learn about it.
So are you a more comfortable flyer now?
No.
That hasn't changed.
No, not really, no.
Well, thanks so much for coming
Thank
and
you.
Talk to us.
Thank you.
Martin Scorsese, director of The Aviator. You can see some of the film's flight scenes at npr.org.